Good evening and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. My privilege to be joined tonight by Marie from Living Compassion. Welcome, Marie.
Hi, Michael.
How are you?
I'm good. Good. Really happy to be here.
Great. Great to have you on the air. To me, it's so exciting to have this opportunity every week at the same time to be able to show up and talk about practice.
Yeah, and tonight I get to talk about one of my favorite topics, and that's when Sherry and the monks come east to the East Coast where I live.
Great. Tell us all about it.
Well, the first thing is we have a retreat coming up May 2nd through 9th in North Carolina. It's called, the retreat center is called Green Cove. The retreat's called Real Life Practice, and Sherry and the monks come east, and the monastery cook comes, and we kind of have the same kind of retreats we have at the monastery right in North Carolina.
So that good food follows from the West Coast to the East Coast.
Yeah, they essentially, somehow the cook manages to recreate the monastery kitchen on the road. It's kind of magical to see it happen.
Yes, yes, it is wonderful.
Yeah, and so it's a really beautiful retreat center that we're lucky to be able to use. It's a summer camp for kids, and we get to come in before they start their season. And it's located on 800 acres of forest right in the middle of the Blue Ridge Mountains.
Wow, it sounds really beautiful.
It is, and especially, you know, springtime. So
yeah.
It's really it's worth it to come just for the beauty of the surroundings, but then we also have just great support in working with our practice.
Uh-huh. Yes, and you mentioned the title is Real Life Practice.
Yeah, Real Life Practice for those of us out in the world trying to practice and bring as much conscious, compassionate awareness to life as we can. It's just really great when they come here to where we live and support us in that.
Yes, yes, it is really wonderful. And the way you're talking about it and the way I've heard Sherry talk about it is it's our opportunity to bring our lives into spiritual practice rather than the other way around.
Yeah, exactly.
And I know for me that conditioning will always want to keep some part of life outside of spiritual practice. And to me that's what's being pointed at, which is really that we have the opportunity to see the process independent of what the content is that comes up.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I think makes it special for me that they do bring the practice to the East Coast.
You know,
instead of, you know, really leaving everything that's familiar and going to the monastery, I'm kind of still surrounded by an environment I'm familiar with, and life has just been happening, you know, right until I get there, and then it's just a chance to sit with Sherry and the monks and have support and bringing light on what's been going on for me.
Yes, it's really great, and particularly great for those in the Southeast who are nearby there.
Well, yeah, it is great for us, and but the other thing that's great this year is flights are really cheap this time of year.
Yeah.
And so it's also a good time for people from the West Coast to come over to the East Coast and practice with the people here.
Yes, a great opportunity all around.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me about the Northeast as well.
Yeah, there's also a few more opportunities, but one in particular is Sherry's going to be at the Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York. And that is June 26th through 28th. And she's going to be doing a workshop. And the name of that workshop is Fear is a Four-Letter Word.
Yes, we don't hear many four-letter words on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
No, but fear is one of them. Fear is a good one. So, yeah, I think that's just a really great opportunity for people nearby or people may want to fly in for it.
Yes. And I haven't checked the dates, but I'm guessing that's probably a weekend workshop?
Yeah, it is. It's a weekend workshop. It sure is. And it's at Omega Institute, which is a really, really great place. I've been there before. They have a lot of nice grounds, and it's just a really good place to be.
Yes, yes. There's something really wonderful about doing spiritual practice in beautiful nature.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I just really feel grateful that they do bring the practice on the road, because I wouldn't have really known about this practice if they hadn't come to North Carolina many years ago.
Uh-huh.
And so I was lucky enough to go to my first retreat was a North Carolina retreat.
Yes.
And so I just really see the value of them bringing it here to us. It's just really a great thing.
Yes, yes. And the way you talked about it initially, and it's my experience as well, is that wherever I go on retreat, whether it's the monastery or Santa Sabina over New Year's or somewhere else, the privileged environment, the food, the whole environment seems to me to be set up to see how I cause myself to suffer.
Yeah, yeah, it is. They're pretty much the same wherever we go. And they do, they are set up to help us see how we cause ourselves to suffer and also to get free from that.
Yes, yes, yes. To see whatever that story is that we're stuck in and to see how that's maintained so that we can make other choices.
Right, right. And I was thinking about just talking about Green Cove before the call, and you know, there's so much to say about the physical place, about the food, but the thing that is so sweet about it is that we get to have that deep experience of practice all week.
Yes, yes. To me, the image that came to mind just as you said that is there's the beauty of nature, and when I'm in a story or I'm upset or I'm anxious, it's as if it doesn't exist. I mean, truly,
exactly.
It does not exist. And then when
yeah.
I have the chance to be there on retreat, I'm really open to it in ways that otherwise I would not be able to see it and really take in the beauty and the joy of that.
Right. That's really a good point. So I get to experience this beautiful environment in a much deeper way than I often do, because conditioning kind of has me distracted with stories about things. And while I'm on retreat, I'm usually able to let go of a lot of that in a deeper way.
Yeah.
And then really enjoy those Blue Ridge Mountains in a way I haven't before.
Yes. And I do remember seeing a picture of a beautiful lake at Green Cove.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a beautiful lake there, and there's lots of hiking trails and places to walk and big grassy fields and just a lot of great, great nature things happening there.
Great. That's exciting. And then the weekend retreat with Sherry at the Omega Institute will be
mm-hmm.
focused on the topic of fear.
Right, right. Yeah, which is really a great topic. I know I did a workshop with Sherry on fear early in my practice, and it's really just a great topic.
It is a great topic in my experience as well. And I love the title, too, Fear is a Four-Letter Word, because it seems like with conditioning, that's really how, for me at least, how fear is treated, that it's something to be afraid of, to be avoided, not to be looked at, just to kind of take that message in and kind of come to attention to whatever conditioning is telling me to do.
Yeah, yeah, fear, yeah. To avoid the fear and put all of my attention on what conditioning has to say to me.
Yes, yes, yes. So what a great opportunity to look at all that.
Yeah, yeah. So lots of opportunities for people on the East Coast coming up.
Yes, and as you mentioned, cheap airfares, too, for those of us out west.
Yeah, they're unusually cheap because I had to book a flight. So it really is a good time, you know, if for people who have kind of toyed with the idea of coming to North Carolina. It's really a miracle that the flights are as low-priced as they are right now.
Yes, yeah. Wonderful. Marie, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Michael.
Okay. Good night.
Good night. Bye.
Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening.
How are you?
That was fun. I'm good. You?
I'm good. That was fun.
Yeah, there's even something about that, or there's something about that that I think Marie doesn't even know, which will bring back memories for her, and that is that I've just arranged to be at Malaprop's bookstore in Asheville on the Tuesday before that retreat starts. So the retreat starts on the 2nd, it goes from the 2nd to the 9th, which I think is a Saturday to Saturday. And so the Tuesday before that, whatever that is, the 27th or 20, whatever, I'll be at Malaprop's in Asheville. And that's for those of us who have been around North Carolina for a while. And as Marie said, you know, that was the where her first retreat happened. To come back to Malaprop's, I don't know what to compare it to. It's like coming home. And in fact, yeah, the last time I was there was on 9/11, the real 9/11.
Wow.
I was actually in the air when the Twin Towers were struck and landed in Asheville. And, of course, it was just chaos and bedlam and took a good long while to, sort out even what was going on because it was all... It was all very current at that point, and it was that evening that I was scheduled to talk at Malaprop's, and it was quite a time to be together with Sangha.
Yeah.
Which is the point that you and Marie kept making that is one that is essential and something that until people have been practicing for a while, I think they don't really it's really difficult to comprehend. How important Sangha is and what it's like to come together with a whole group of people, spend a week together doing this deep, introspective work together. It's, it's kind of like it's a family reunion with the family of your dreams.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a very... It's an extraordinary, to me, an extraordinary way to be with people.
Yes, yes. I had an image come up as you were talking. A life raft in the middle of the open ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, a huge one.
Yes.
And on that life raft are, some of your favorite people in the world.
Yes.
And it's funny because, people come into a retreat, and, of course, everybody has their first time in a retreat, and we are so much alike. Oh my goodness. So the person feels like they're on the outside and everybody's watching them and people are judging them. And of course, what's really going on for old timers is they're just ecstatic that somebody new is coming to practice. And for the new person, they're awkward and they don't know what's going on and, it's so hard and the voices are just killing them and that sort of thing. And by the end of the week, everybody, it's like we've all known each other for all of our lives, even though the only conversation that has happened has been these, very softly spoken sentences between a work director, a cook or whatever, and a retreatant. Or in guidance appointments with me, or in groups at night, and yet with just that little bit of normal contact between people, what grows is this deep sense of love and connection and belonging that is just a marvel to behold. And again, no wonder conditioning resists so hard. Us having the experience because, it gets so much mileage out of spiritual practice. It's too hard and it's scary and I don't want to do it and it's no fun and they're so serious. And because once a person actually finds out what's going on in spiritual practice, conditioning is an odd person out.
Amazing. And it's interesting.
Yes.
Because before practice, you could have explained that to me, and it would have not registered. And once I have experience,
all.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Precisely. It's so zen. You know, I could sit here and tell you everything there is to know about an avocado, and you would just be looking at me like, what are you talking about? And then you take a bite of avocado and go, oh, oh, okay, I get it. Now, are we having the same experience? Probably not. We'll actually never know, but we both have our own experience of avocado. And it, with practice, of course, if we're going to stick with that, we hope that we both have a deep love of avocado.
Yes. Yes. Yes, indeed. Sherry, let me give out the phone number here.
Nobody's called it?
We have one person on the line here, and I want to invite others in as well.
Wow, that's something.
That number is toll-free, 888-4-SANGHA. Numbers, that's 888-472-6442. That'll get you into the system. And then you want to dial the call ID number, which is 15406, and then pound, and that will get you in the queue here. Okay.
I sense people just punching numbers like crazy out there.
Yeah.
But let's talk to this person who is our first caller of the evening.
Yes. First caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. It's John in Los Angeles.
Hey, John.
Long time no speak.
I know. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. I'm
good.
Well.
What's going on?
Well, I've been wanting to call in for a really, really long time, and I've been subverted by some unseen force for months every time I wanted to call. So I mean,
unseen but well-known.
Unfortunately, yeah, a little too well known. But I made it a commitment today that I'd find my way to speak to you. So I've been sitting here for like an hour going, okay, I'm going to call in.
Very good.
So there's two things I kind of wanted to report in about. And I want to start with the sort of good news part, which is I found out today that I believe that I'm the first artist freelance person that I know of who got a TARP-funded loan modification so I can keep my house. And the way I got it,
congratulations.
Thank you. But it's important that the way I got it was I refused to believe in the fantasies of authority. And so I maintained
always
that,
a good
that
idea.
And it got me through 8 months of the most bizarre experience of my life, and now I get to keep my house.
So not believing in the fantasies of authority, very good. How did that manifest?
The projection, my projection was, is that the environment is so fear-based and so confused, and I just kept presenting myself as, I want to keep my home, this is important to me, and when someone would say no, I wouldn't believe what they were saying, and I would say why. And that was what, and the final conversation was actually the underwriter at the Beck was yelling at me, like actually yelling at me on the phone, very upset that I wouldn't take no for an answer. And was telling me that I'm not going to get it. I'm a freelance artist, and you know, you musicians all think you can, you know, ruin the economy, and I mean, really saying things like that. And I just kept saying that that's not true, and why. And finally, he took a really deep breath, and I sat there and I didn't say anything. And he said, "Let's look at this again." And at the end of another 45 minutes, he offered me the opportunity.
Wow! Isn't that amazing?
That's
actually a practice that the monks are very good at here at the monastery, because there are all kinds of insane situations in life like that, right? Especially with banks and credit card companies and phone companies and all these people who seem, bless their hearts, to get pointed down a track, and they forget that they're human and we're human, and it's just what it says on that piece of paper and what they've told me I have to do. And to just stay with it, stay polite, stay calm, and be consistent, you know.
Yeah.
And then finally, humanity somehow breaks through, and there we are together.
Either that or my theory is that they just didn't want to talk to me anymore.
Well, that can work too. We'll give him anything if he'll just go away.
Yeah, Make the guy stop calling us.
Yeah, and that works too, doesn't it?
I'm very pleased because, and this is the second half of why I'm calling. Something you said recently to a caller was about as someone gets closer or to revealing the process, conditioning really ramps up.
Mm-hmm.
And the last year for me has probably been one of the most challenging years of my life. And the last time I spoke to you, I reported that, you know, a lot of challenges were coming up on a daily basis and content was really overwhelming. And I've very much been identified, but I stuck with the practice. Now, am I getting regular relief from the identification? No. Am I disidentifying more? Yes and no. But is it a problem? Not as much.
Yeah.
Not as much.
Which is a form of disidentification, isn't it?
It feels that way. I mean, there was a period over the last year where there were too many factors that were overwhelming me, and I didn't know how to process it, and so the voices got a hold. Really good,
mm-hmm.
really good. I mean, there was just too many things that I couldn't integrate, and so practice became even practice started to become, you know, that we've talked about this, where it starts to subvert practice.
Mm-hmm.
And that was also not believing the fantasy of authority, where this voice of authority in my head was saying, see, you can't even do practice. It's not even supporting you. That was actually a trigger for me to continue doing practice.
Yes. Yeah. After a while, it just kind of ticks you off, doesn't it?
Like, oh, yeah.
Shut up. You're not going to – you're not the boss of me.
That's actually a very – I said that sentence a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I had a lot of downtime. With health issues and sort of like just, you know, really strong sense of, the word depression isn't really quite accurate because it was just a very dark time. And I don't know if I'm coming out of it so much as I'm just not engaging. It's hard to explain.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people
yeah.
in my community are suffering. A lot of people in general are suffering. But I'm trying to, there's a sentence that's my practice right now, which is Osho said, which is, Don't just do something. Sit there.
Yep.
Yeah, that's sort of what's been happening for me because I was constantly trying to figure out what I was doing wrong that was creating the scenarios that were constantly arising. Whatever was ramping up to get me distracted, and it worked
mm-hmm.
really well. I mean, it.
Oh, yeah, it's a master at it.
I didn't call you for almost a year. I think I haven't called you for almost a year.
Yeah. Yeah. And the interesting thing, of course, is, conditioning wants the human to take circumstances personally and to view circumstances through the lens that conditioning offers. Of course, to me, the whole point of life is for us to learn to say to the human, gosh, I'm sorry this is happening to you. How can I help?
Yeah, I think I would ask you then as your student, and I've been your student a while now, is when you're really identified, at least my experience at this point is even though I was practicing, and I kept the commitment to practice, ramped up, it felt like this, like a siege.
Yes.
You know,
absolutely.
There was quality to it, and it was,
yeah.
And you know, it becomes like this feedback loop, where you can be sitting, and even the sitting is becoming the siege, and I have to really continue through that, and I'm not really sure what the next sort of thing is other than to just keep sitting is. I really
don't. I can tell you what it is, because I happen to know you well enough to know that you have a child, and if you're now during this last year, you have continued to have a child, and if your child needs something, then you somehow manage from somewhere to get together what is necessary to do the best you can to meet that need.
Yes, although you know him, and he also was actually in terms of caregiving, he was actually inspiring because he was able to step up, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
At the age now where he was able to step up and be very gentle and very caring, and he stays with that consistently.
Yeah.
That was really inspiring.
Yeah. So, and he learned that from somewhere.
Okay.
Yeah. So, good to take that in, Dad.
You know how I am about that, so I'm just going to say okay.
Yeah. So, you just say okay and work on taking it in.
Thank you.
So, the point is that what we're getting to is that in this, in your case, you learn to see John the same way and from the same place that you view your son. It's not
more. Yeah, definitely more. I would agree with that. More.
Yes, and that's what makes all the difference. Because when you are able to do that, you will make the same extraordinary effort for John that you do for your son. Because what you will see is that John is just as worthy. And as that human, he is just as incapable of going beyond that, getting through that siege by himself, as your son would be. Where we stumble is that we identify ourselves as the human. Okay, so when you and I, and I'm making little, you know, little things in the air, because I don't see you as that human John. What I see when I look at you or think of you is the conscious, compassionate awareness that is here to liberate that human being from suffering.
Yeah, I'm grateful for that.
Yeah.
That beast shows up occasionally, and I'm always grateful when he does.
Yes, and practice is inviting that being in. So this is where, you know, we can start sounding like those God-centered religions, because it becomes a matter of asking for that conscious, compassionate awareness to be there. If you're identified with John, then what you're doing is asking that disidentified, transcendent, conscious, compassionate awareness to be there to help you. And each time you do that, now this is subtle, okay, but you can handle it. Each time you do that, you are actually doing that from conscious, compassionate awareness. Okay? Because...
And every time I come, you're saying that every time I come back or sit, that's conscious, compassionate awareness in action.
Correct.
Okay.
And that you can ask that to be there more in your life. Now, you know that the focus of our attention is what's determining the quality of our lives. So as you turn your attention to that, that's why that's such a big part of what I encourage people toward. You know, if you know, you can actually think about how you are with Jesse. And it will take you to the place you want to be in for John. Now, as soon as you leave that and go up into conditioned mind and start thinking about it, it's going to run a number on you. And the more you get involved with it, the farther away you get from that conscious, compassionate awareness. But any time you turn your attention back to it, that's what's there. And that's what practice is. It's constantly bringing our attention back to conscious, compassionate awareness, out of conditioned mind, out of the story.
Yeah, that's the hard part in a certain way. In a certain way, my experience, at least in this last year, was that, and still somewhat ongoing, is that the hooked quality of whatever is engaging my attention, it's almost like that when you have a sore tooth or the
yes.
song stuck in your head. It's like it's
yep.
not that you really want to play with the sore tooth or hear that song one more time, but there's a compelling aspect of especially for what I experienced recently, where the evolving and qualitative content, it wasn't specifically what content it was this overall global theme of content that was just so overwhelming, I just felt like I didn't know what to do.
I didn't know
what to do.
Well, and that's why in Buddhism, you know, we say we will do this when we've suffered enough.
Yeah.
So I was just talking with someone earlier, and the conversation that we were having was about depression. and talking about how people, when identified with conditioned mind, will. So if it's something like depression, or it's eating better, or not drinking alcohol, or whatever it is, okay, so the person gets to a place where they realize, whew, I've got to do something about myself here. So they go on whatever program it is. They start eating better, they start exercising, they stop drinking, they, you know, take supplements or whatever it is for depression, and they feel better. And as soon as they feel better, they quit. Then, of course, they start feeling bad again. They get beaten up for having quit. Okay, so it's you know, we can extrapolate there. It's just going to get worse and worse and worse over time. Okay, but when a person has suffered enough, then they no longer have to have the experience of feeling bad before they want to feel good. There is just a clarity that arises. If I eat that, I'm going to feel bad. If I drink that, I won't feel good. I don't like the way I feel when I'm not taking care of myself. I don't want to do that. Not, I desperately want to do that, but I'm trying to make myself not do it. But literally, I don't want that. And that's what practice is taking us to. And, you know, it actually, since there's, you know, we don't have a Judeo-Christian orientation to life, so there's no time frame. It's not like, you know, you've got to accomplish this, you know, in the next whatever period of time. You don't even have to accomplish it in this lifetime. But slowly, over time, we get ourselves to the point of realizing, I don't want to do that anymore because I don't want to suffer over that. And when we turn that corner, disidentifying becomes a completely different issue.
It's interesting because that was what was the focus of my attention when I, at a certain point in practice, I was getting fairly comfortable, or I guess I may have become too comfortable in disidentifying. And when things started getting rough, and at one point when what was described to me as I was told by a voice of authority that you're in some sort of depression, and they prescribed that I take some sort of a pill. And I can't drink coffee. Sherry, you've seen me, I can't drink coffee. And they gave me these pills, and apparently I'm one of the very small percentage that's allergic to these depression pills. And I got very sick. And within like a week, I had to call the doctor, and I said, I would rather be depressed than take this thing into my body. And
yeah,
the reactions that was happening to my body and what was happening to my mind, because it was so far from what I understood of how I could direct my attention or how I could attend to whatever feelings of grief or energies that were coming up in my body that were telling me things. It was doing so much to exacerbate it, not make it feel better, actually. It wasn't making it feel better. And I eventually had to come to the decision that I'm going to have to go through this. That the depressed energy or whatever was moving through me had to go through me, and I'm still going through it, but I'm just it's not quite as there's this little pinprick of light.
Here's the thing about it. You know, and somebody just said this to me the other day. A very dear friend is dying, and of course there's all the grief that goes with that, all the sadness, and she said, and there's also a sweetness to it. There's a preciousness to it. There is being in that state of love, and that's what we're talking about. So whatever it is that the person is going through, to go through it with them in that state of love makes any of it beyond manageable, actually joyful.
Yeah,
okay.
I can start to see that. The message I got a lot from being in a very dark space was actually I interpreted it as shame, and I had to really work with that. That it was a shame. It was like to be ashamed that I was experiencing deep feelings of grief about whatever the content was, that I was feeling ashamed that I couldn't resolve it. You know what I mean? Content was being manipulated to make me feel ashamed, and that or whatever that interpretation was, and I had to find a way to work with
here, John. John, this is classic, typical self-hating, egocentric karmic conditioning stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It'll make you, it'll try to embarrass you, it'll try to make you feel shame, it'll make you try to make you feel guilt, it'll try to make you feel fear, it'll try to make you feel whatever, which is why, again, to go back to that image of how would you be with your son if he were getting pelted with that kind of information. And that's the model that we hold, and then we turn that inward. All right? Now, I don't know if anybody has called, but I have a little growing concern here that we can talk through the whole show, and then Michael's going to say, and there are those 43 people who are left. Because they all called in feeling bad that there was only that one call, and then now they're all stacked up out there.
I'm very grateful, as always, Sherry, and I'm glad to be able to continue to practice with you guys.
Well, I am delighted to get to talk with you, so don't be a stranger, okay?
I understand. I'll call again.
All right. Thanks, John.
Thanks. Bye.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, John. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, you are indeed omniscient. There are five callers in the queue here.
See? Aren't they good?
They are very good. They're very responsive.
Yes.
Good awareness students. We're going to take a quick break here, and then we'll be right back.
The Zen Blues Quartet is a collaborative music project celebrating life and the music of the blues. Good musicians and good friends coming together to make something really beautiful simply because we can. Zen Blues Music. For myself, as a Zen student, I see a direct connection between playing the blues and awareness practice, because for me, both seem to require a willingness to be really present in the moment. Zen Blues Quartet is proud to sponsor Open Air Talk Radio with Sherry Huber, as we firmly believe that the quality of your life is dependent on the focus of your attention.
What a life, what a life, my mind, what a life, what a life.
Please visit us at www.zenbluesmusic.com for more information about our project.
I sure do love it, I sure.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, that was a very inspiring call. I really enjoyed that.
Well, it's always a pleasure to, to me, that's what you and Marie were talking about. It's, you know, it's being with Sangha. It's being with people who are doing their very best to do practice at the deepest level they can. And that is always inspiring.
Yes, indeed.
Uh-huh.
Okay, we have five callers in the queue here. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Anna from Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Hey, Anna.
Hi,
how's
Sherry.
How's it going?
Hi, Michael. It's going okay.
Good.
Yeah. It's funny because I was like, oh, I want to call today, and then I got home like right at 8 o'clock and looked at the queue and it was like empty. So I was actually dialing, as you guys were inviting people to. So
perfect.
I feel very, very fortunate. So what is going on? It's a good question. It feels like there's a sense that I'm seeing a lot, and there's a lot of different like content, and my process is attaching itself to really different content than it has in the past. And at the same time, there's this kind of I guess it's self-hate. I don't know what it is. This whole, like, what's going on here? This is, what is this?
And so let me see if I'm tracking here. So,
yeah.
So there's watching a very familiar process going on with different content.
Yeah, it's like it's only becoming familiar, as I'm able to disidentify from it more. A lot of times I'm really identified with it, and it's like taking over my body, and my thoughts are sort of racing, and there's a driven quality to it, and it's happening around different content than I just had happened since I started doing this practice, I think.
When the content changes, it's easier to see the process, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's a slow thing. It's happening over and over and over again, so that is helpful. And it's like each time that it happens.
Hello?
Sure, it looks like we lost
Did we
her.
Lose Anna?
Looks like we lost Anna.
Oh, darn.
Darn. I will watch the queue for her return.
Okay. See if we can get her back.
Yeah. Okay, you ready to go to the next caller?
Sure.
Okay, next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Janet calling from New Hampshire.
Hey, Janet.
Hi.
What's going on? Boy, it's the
Northeast.
Yeah, that's good.
The Northeast contingent. I'm calling because I'm having a time right now with not being able to make any decisions. And it's really kind of snuck up on me, or it didn't really sneak up on me. It came over me, and
more like a blanket, huh?
Exactly like a blanket. And I was thinking about it because my life feels like it's been very expansive, and I've been moving into things in a big way.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, it's like, I can't make a decision about anything.
Well,
you know
what? I would actually expect that.
I know. I knew you would say that.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to call because I wanted you to say that and also reiterate about you can make any decision and it's all going to be okay.
Oh, yeah. It's really perfect, isn't it? So, first of all, it is an interesting thing to have happen because, as you I'm sure know, when you're expansive like that, oftentimes what happens is fear. And
mm-hmm.
and the fear is often off the wall, nutsy stuff. But because of the way it presents, people don't recognize it that way. So, we tend to believe stuff. So, all of a sudden you feel like somebody's watching you or you get afraid somebody's going to break in the house in the middle of the night or something like that. And because it feels really real, it doesn't catch our attention that, I bet this is simply conditioning trying to scare me out of expansiveness. That's not likely to happen to a person right away. So this is an interesting one because it kind of sneaks over you that now you can't make a decision about anything. Well, that's going to result in anxiety, if not fear, before very long.
Well,
right?
It already is. I can already feel the anxiety starting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it gets there one way or the other. But the thing that is good news for it is that the expansiveness is gone.
Yes. Because how can there be expansiveness when I can't make a move in any direction? It's like it has totally shrunk me.
Right. Yes. Yes. Exactly.
Like, I hear this happening. Well, you might as well do nothing. Don't even bother. Don't even bother. Do nothing. It's going to be the wrong thing. All of these kinds of things, and I'm just like, whoa, wow. I even share, yesterday I was leaving the grocery store, and I looked up, you know how they have that mirror where you can see yourself walking out above the door? And I just happened to glance up and I saw myself and I heard this, gosh, I'm the wrong person living the wrong life. And I just had to start laughing. I said, I am like right in it, big time here. But the way it had presented was this not being able to make decisions. But when I heard that, it was like, oh, wow, I am so.
There has been a takeover. And yet it was really perfect, wasn't it? Because you do know how to pay attention. And so there you are, present, when that thing happens and you hear that voice, and it actually causes you to disidentify, which is not at all what, you know, what the desired effect was supposed to be.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so in that way, I was like, you know, today I'm making a decision, and then, you know, I'm going to do this one thing. And then I found I couldn't do it. And
because?
I couldn't do it because what if it was the wrong decision?
Oh, okay. Well,
and so it's got me
really moving through that rapidly, aren't we? Yeah, so just get your quarter.
That's why I'm calling you, because I want to hear what you're going to say.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Get out your coin and just start flipping it. You know, just become a decision-making machine. You know, stop people on the street and ask them if they need any decisions made. You know, just go at it full tilt. And of course, it'll find something else very quickly, because this is not going to work. Because, I mean, what are you going to do? What kind of bad decisions are you going to make? You know, I would encourage you not to sell the house. Okay? Probably don't quit your job or leave your relationship. Aside from that, you know, what kind of life and death decisions are you liable to muck up?
I know, and they aren't. Life and death decisions, and they're all—it's all good stuff.
Yeah,
but it's being presented like, life.
Yeah,
and death.
You want to run through three or four of them, and we can make these decisions together right now.
Okay, well, this is a really interesting one, so I can talk about content.
Sure.
Okay, so one of them is I just started. A little side business of doing one-on-one yoga. So there's a yoga therapy conference coming up on my vacation in April. And so I was like going to take it because I thought, well, this will be really good for me. And then, you know, oh, no, I can't take it. I should really not. Well, because maybe that's not what I really want to be doing.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So we've made that one. You're going to go to the conference. Okay. What's next?
Okay.
And of course, you know, you want to prepare yourself.
They're all just like that. I mean, I can see what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it is your vacation, right?
Yeah.
And this is something that you want to do, and you want to be prepared to enjoy yourself because it is your vacation.
Right. But that's one of the things that's coming up is like, well, no, maybe you might not enjoy yourself too much. Maybe you need to do something else that you're really going to enjoy yourself. I think you should go sing somewhere. You know, it's all of a sudden like all the, like, oh, no, wait, look over here.
Yeah.
Wait, look over here.
Yeah, but you've already made the decision, haven't you?
To go?
Yeah. In other words, you.
Well, I think I thought I had.
Yes, you did. And that's one of the big clues for us. So we make a decision, and the voices come in with, well, yes, but, well, but. Now that's, you know, anytime you hear somebody making an argument that starts off, well, but, you just shut it down. Because
okay,
it's just
that's a good one.
Yeah, it's just conditioning coming in afterwards. So with something like that, you've started this thing, this opportunity comes up, everything in you goes, oh, wow, that would be great. There, the decision is made. No second guessing.
Okay.
I mean, what's the worst that can happen? You know?
There really is not a worst. That's why I'm saying none of these decisions are like, it's all good stuff. I mean, I'm so fortunate, and I'm, you know, fortunate in all of it. every aspect
okay.
of it.
All
there's,
right.
There's
good.
Nothing wrong.
That's right. Okay.
And I just wanted to state that I'm getting big and conditioning's trying to keep me small.
Oh, absolutely.
So I just want to put that out there. That
And always, and maybe make a sign for yourself, you know, my good time is up to me.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah, circumstances don't dictate my good time. I can be anywhere with anybody doing anything, and I can have a good time if I'm having a good time, if I'm choosing to have a good time. If I'm not choosing to have a good time, I can be anywhere with anybody doing anything and be miserable.
Yeah,
you're going to go there, and you're going to have a good time because you're going to be with you, and you have a good time when you're with you.
Yes.
Good.
All
Report
right.
back, okay?
I definitely will. Thank you so much. Good night, Sherry. Good night, Michael.
Good night.
Good night, Janet. Thanks for joining us, Janet. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to take a quick sponsor break here, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
Porchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, I have a caller who I think might be Anna here.
Oh, excellent.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
This is Anna again.
Welcome back.
Yeah, I'm so excited. this has been really a very interesting thing that just happened, because one of the things that has been going on is conditioning's like, oh, you're not practicing anymore, you're not dedicated to practice, you aren't, you know, this is just whatever. And I just called back. Like, I totally got off the hook, and I was like, I just called back because I really wanted to call. And I don't know, it's very sweet. It's like a really sweet thing because someone really wanted to call. And there was this whole thing around, like, oh, you know, whatever, you know, you shouldn't call, da 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 da. And I just called anyway. And
that's right.
Yeah, and I think that's what's going on a lot of the time. It's like that's what's going on. Like, that's
uh-huh.
fundamentally who's driving my life.
Uh-huh.
And there's this entire story about how that's not so.
Uh-huh. And so, Anna, do you take time or spend time with the part of you who does practice, who wants to do practice? Are you ever in actual conversation with that person?
I don't know that I do.
Might be an interesting.
I'm not sure.
Might be an interesting little dialogue to. Have you ever done Dave's two-chair exercise?
I've done it when I was at the monastery, but I've never done it not at the monastery.
Yeah. It might be a fun thing to do, you know, just you gals have a little conversation so that you get to know her better, kind of how she views life and what's important to her and how it feels to you when she's there in your life and what her
mm-hmm.
needs are and how you can support her and how she supports you and, you know, just to deepen that relationship.
Yeah, because I guess it's like a lot of things where there is that like deep sense of wanting to do whatever it is I'm doing, and then conditioning like comes in and turns it into a should or a have to.
Yes.
And then it's not the same thing.
No. That's the whole point.
Right.
Right? Yeah. So you you like to exercise, you enjoy it, your body feels good when you exercise. And so what the voices are going to do is turn that into something you have to do and you should do, and there's pressure, and suddenly there's anxiety about it, and you feel bad when you don't, and it's all designed just to take the pleasure out of your life, nothing else.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like when I'm disidentified, it's like, oh, it's totally clear. And then when I'm identified, it's like so really real, the other experience.
Yeah, which is why, of course, we do all those exercises about, you know, we conditioned mind would like us to believe that we're terribly complex and unique and special. And and of course, we're not. So it's really possible for us to, you know, take a big piece of paper and write down on one side body, feelings, mind, and mind objects, you know, what is the world like when I'm centered? You know, what do I think about? What do the voices talk about? What does my body feel like? What emotions are present? What, you know, all of that. And then on the other side, same thing with when I'm identified with conditioning. And then, because it doesn't change very much. Okay, the only reason it has so much power over us is that we believe it. So if I train myself, like one of the things that was most helpful for me was a little thing that I used to say to myself, which is, if I'm not happy, I'm identified.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I'm centered, I'm happy, regardless of life circumstances. I can even be in a situation that is painful, and yet I'm happy within that because I'm happy to be alive. I'm happy with life. I'm happy, you know. It's not giddy. It's not giggling. But there's a sense of well-being and a subtle joy. And so that would help me when is going on, I can know I'm identified. I might not know with what, but I know I'm not centered.
Yeah, yeah. Because I think one of the things that I guess is I guess I'm practicing with is that when I'm really identified, to set up hooks for me to have the opportunity to, for it even to occur to me that there's a different life situation.
Yes.
You know, because it's you know, it's just so, when I'm identified, it's like so a one-track kind of thing.
Yes.
And there's so much momentum behind what it is that I'm identified with.
Yeah. That's why it's good to call into the radio show or listen to the archives or join Reflective Listening Buddies. Find a sitting group. It's so that there's something regularly to remind you, as you say, that there's another possibility.
Yeah, and it's like I have a lot of these things in my life, but it's I think I'm still I think it's just really hard to be away from Sangha, like, you know, the actual, like, you know, because I lived in Palo Alto for so, not so long, but for long enough and close to the monastery for a while, that it's a big adjustment.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're always welcome to come back.
Yeah.
There's plenty of room for you in California, and we'd be happy to have you here.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. And, you know, people listening to that could think I'm being facetious, but I'm not.
Mm-hmm. Because, I know you're not.
Yeah. When we realize what our true priorities are, then we want to align our lives with our priorities.
Yeah, and it's like moments like this that I'm like, that is so, and that is what I want my life to be like. And there are so many, you know, when I'm not in this place, it's like a foreign language. It's like, that makes no sense at all.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, what are you thinking? You know,
yeah.
Your job, your life, your job. It's just like identified and unidentified. It's just, it's just astounding. It's like
it's astounding.
Yeah.
Two different worlds.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
And thanks for calling back.
Thank you.
All right. Good night.
Bye. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Anna. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have about 9 minutes, and we have three more callers here.
All right. We'll do our best.
We'll do our best. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. This is Greta.
Hi, Greta.
Hi.
Now we're hearing from the great Northwest.
It's not so great. It's cold and wet and feels like the middle of winter.
I'm so sorry.
Well, I know you guys are wanting rain. I wish you could have some.
I know. I wish people could just send it in to us, but alas, it doesn't work that way, does it? I am going to organize, though, before too long, in our county, a rain dance. I keep threatening, and I think it's really critical. It's imperative. And what we might do is see if we can organize, you know, Sangha all over the world to just focus on rain in Calaveras County. Wouldn't that be an amazing thing to accomplish?
It certainly seems possible.
Well, it is. You know, Native Americans have a long history of doing that, but, you know, we are so scientific, so certain that it's not possible. So I just think, spiritually, it would be a tremendous exercise. You know, the transcendental meditation folks have proved that meditators, a certain percentage of meditators in a given area can do things like lower violence and crime rates and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
Native Americans have shown that they can bring in rain from anywhere. So why not Buddhists?
Well, it kind of seems like prayer circles or any of the other things. It's just another example of focusing attention, right?
Don't you think? Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, if you're aligned with the universe and you're thinking all the same thing, well, it should work. So I
need
to get more people here to think about sun.
Sunshine, right?
Yeah, so could we have warmer weather in Washington, please?
So what's going on up there besides the sketchy weather?
Endless winter. Well,
winter.
I've been wanting to call in for a while and just put this out there because it seems with the new sort of the uncertainty in the economy and the environment, and then kind of how things are shifting at the monastery and changing, and seems like some uncertainty there, and all the emails kind of involving us in that. What's happening for me is really just like a blank, and it's disturbing to me because what you said with the last caller was, well, if this is a priority for you, then you would arrange your life, and arrange your life in such a way that you would be focusing on practice. And yet I heard an archive from a couple weeks ago where the caller and you were talking about how we end up practicing just to make our lives a little less miserable, and so we're just comfortable in our conditioning. And I'm really kind of seeing that, like, oh, I can do it this way but not that way. And, I can practice with this but not with that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's,
which is very good to see, isn't it?
It's good to see in the sense that somehow conditioning sort of running, I guess, a big con job on what practice is and isn't or who's in charge of it.
Well, you know, for me, the conditioning is never going to give up. It's just not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just the most tenacious form in the universe, as far as I can tell. When we're practicing, we're always practicing. Now, I suspect that we're always practicing when we don't know that we're practicing, in the sense that my teacher used to say, everybody's a Buddhist. Right. Everybody is on a path to awakening. So, you know, we go along. Now, how long did you have to practice before you came to that awareness?
Right.
Yeah. So, and
all
my
life
of that,
up till then.
Yeah. And all of that led to that awareness. That conditioning would then say, oh, well, geez, I mean, what kind of awareness is that? Well, very powerful awareness to have. And then that opens up a whole new range of possibilities for you that weren't available before that realization.
Yeah, it's kind of got, I have to look at it more closely. There's sort of a setup with that, you know, if you haven't done it, you know, if you're not making these big, bold moves, or you're not participating in this way, then, you know, you're never going to, and you're just kind of stuck in this halfway practice thing.
Well, now, of course, that's kind of hard to
make sure either.
Yeah, to what we were talking about with John. We can't get fooled by the fact that conditioning is making the campaign that it's currently making.
Right.
Because it's
exactly.
Always going to make a campaign. I mean, you could... Whatever you decide to do in your life, it's going to make its best effort to launch a campaign to make you miserable.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it seems like then it's this. It's just using this particular content to give me, to run the same process of something's wrong, you know, there's something
That's
wrong.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Yeah. The bottom line
it seems more believable because I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
Or it's holding it in place, I guess.
Right. Whatever you will believe
right.
and get miserable over, that's right. what it's going to use.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So, you know, if it says, well, you know, Bill Gates lives in your area there, your
mm-hmm.
neighborhood, and look at how much money you have. Look at how much money he has. You're really doing it wrong. Probably your reaction would be, what? What are you talking about?
Yeah,
so
that's
not a good one to use on you.
Right, but there's something else that's a little more believable.
That's right.
Out. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, it's really interesting how, you know, that there's so many parallels with that. And, you know, I am grateful for having seen it. The other kind of parallel is if you were really practicing, then you wouldn't get stuck in these interactions with people that make you feel bad. You know, you'd be better at that. You know, so I guess when I can see that, when it's really loud and it kicks up, then I just have to realize it's always doing something all the time.
Yeah, yeah. And, of course, with that sort of thing, I just want you really to practice your facilitation skills. You know,
uh-huh.
It's a projection workshop, and you're the facilitator. Really? Really? So what I hear you saying is, if I were really practicing, in your experience, your projection is that if I were really practicing, then, now what was that again? What is your projection about how I would be?
You know, I really want to do that in real life with people, too. I got caught in this same kind of, external situation, just like I get caught with conditioning, by biting the hook and following the story. And
yeah.
I realized afterwards that all I had to do was either reflect back or just do the, yes, what I hear you saying, and just really step out of it, but it's so alluring. You know, you just get sucked in so quick. It's just one thing, and you're right there.
Yep.
One step or one word, there's some little hook, and I could really see it. It was like, oh, I believed that, and from that moment on, I had a whole story about how all of these horrible things were going to happen.
Yeah. Now, of course, when I listen to you, what
mm-hmm.
I want to say is, would you please do something to celebrate having that awareness? I mean, that's huge.
I am. I'm calling here. I mean, that's why
I wanted
to call and just put it out there. Like I said, it doesn't feel like anything when conditioning gets a hold of it. You're absolutely right. But actually, I did feel very good when I noticed that I could have made a difference, and I was taking care of myself in this situation when I became aware of it.
Yeah. That's huge.
Yeah, it is, because otherwise you're just abandoning yourself to all the negativity that's actually happening in the physical situation, and then all the conditioning that comes afterwards, which was enormous.
Yeah. And so seeing it, you know, conditioning still wants us to believe, yeah, but if you were doing it right, conditioning,
mm-hmm.
wouldn't exist.
Right. I wouldn't be beating you up if you were.
That's right. Yeah.
Right.
There wouldn't be anything
over and
to see. If you were the right person, there wouldn't even be any conditioning to see, because I would be gone. And, of course, that is just a crock. So the
and isn't
best
that
we
the
can
biggest
ever do.
Scam?
Yeah.
That's like
the
biggest scam. The whole thing is predicated on that.
Yes.
If you would do it right, you wouldn't have the voices wouldn't be there anymore.
That's right.
You wouldn't fall for
the say the voices. Yeah. And, in fact, mm-hmm. the very best we can do is see them, chart them, make giant,
right.
you know, process maps of them, get really familiar with them, learn how to sidestep them, learn how to laugh at them, practice our facilitation with them, use them.
Yes.
That's the best we can do, is to use them for our awakening.
I hear that. Okay, well,
good.
I appreciate the show and the archives, and I look forward to seeing you all very soon.
Excellent. I look forward to that, too. Thanks, Greta.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you for joining us, Greta. Sherry, it's a couple minutes after 6. We have 2 callers, and I'm going to invite them to call back early next week.
Yes, that would be very good.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Sherry. And I'm grateful
thanks to everybody,
all of our,
huh?
Yes, all of our callers and all of our listeners tonight.
Yeah. All right. Let's do it again.
Okay. Talk to you next week.
All right. Okay. Good night.
Good night.